Hey guys, Scott here. Just a quick note that today's episode has a ton of content. Oh man, we had lots to talk about, Patrick, Dills, and I, and we do at length. But as you may have noticed, this has been a really slow week for WoW news, and it has been a huge week for Hearthstone, Diablo, and Heroes. So we talk a lot about stuff in those games. There's some WoW stuff, don't worry, especially our email at the end. We have a big conversation about the future of paying for WoW. And there's some stuff at the top of the show about Blizzard financials and what WoW's doing right now, but I just wanted to let you know, some of you may go, oh, well, and then there's not a lot of WoW stuff. I'm not going to listen to the rest of this. So just a little fair warning. Tons of great content, tons of great discussion, but it's not wall-to-wall Warcraft today. All right? Just wanted to do you that little favor. See you on the other side. EU was a shit show.
You're listening to The Instance.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Instance. This is The Instance episode 424 for Friday, August 28th, 2015. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Patrick from France. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, how's it going,
everyone? I'm great. You're always so excited at the beginning. What's up with that? That's great.
I try to, you know, instill some kind of energy into the show. And also, Hearthstone and Diablo. Woohoo!
Oh, yeah, big deal. Big week this week. Actually, Heroes
and
as
also,
well. Yeah.
And also, Terpster's not here. Woohoo!
Yay! Woo! Right? Terpster's at a conference, but we do have Dills. Dills, welcome.
Hello. No conferences for me today.
Mm-mm. No. Nope. No.
Just The Instance. I'm here for you guys.
Sweet man.
I'm excited. Although, you know, I'm very disappointed about one thing in particular.
What's that?
We're supposed to go to a Giants Cardinals game tonight for Torture Cast.
Yeah.
With Veronica Belmont.
Mm.
And we were only granted one press pass and we had to reschedule.
Oh,
yeah.
Rough.
It was going to be awesome. And, but apparently everybody wants to go to this game because they are, yeah.
It's a big rivalry. I know that Tom Merritt would kill for tickets.
The Cardinals are like the best team in baseball right now. Mm. So it makes sense.
Great.
This is what happens when, you know, it's like a Dodgers series or something like that, or near the end of the season when the playoffs are around, yeah. Suddenly press shows up that yeah. wasn't there the rest of the season. So yeah. We were requesting four passes. It was kind of a lot.
Well, they heard
but
that
it sucks because
they...
I wanted to hang out and talk sure. baseball and
yeah.
walk around on the field and watch Veronica freak out about Hunter Pence and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
she's really
not
into
gonna
that
happen.
Guy. Really into that guy. She is the destroyer of worlds. So they probably heard they got wind of it and they said, sorry.
Nope, we can't have
nope,
that.
Not tonight. This is an important game. Can't have her here destroying things. Well, anyway, good luck with that. So who's going? Nobody? You just got the one press pass?
Yeah, one of us. Not me. Not Veronica. The other guy.
Sweet. Lucky yep. other guy.
That's fine, though. I'm going to stream some Hearthstone later tonight, and I broke down and bought 60 more packs, so I'll open
Holy
those on stream.
Shite.
Wow.
Hold on a minute.
Because I was talking on the Angry Chicken, and Jocelyn's like, yeah, I opened 130 packs. And I was like, I only opened 100.
Oh.
All right, fine. Screw that.
Bought more packs. That's crazy. Okay.
So I bought 60 more.
We're going to talk all about Hearthstone later, and I want to hear how that opening went. Also, day one was a bit of a crap shoot, but we'll talk about that too. But I don't want to forget about this conversation about the mindset of buying 160 card packs. Mm. For that game and what
for a set that only has 132 cards.
Yeah, think of that. See, that's what I'm getting at is kind of the math and the trickle down effect there is pretty intense. So we'll get to all that, everybody.
This is how they're making $20 million a month.
Yeah.
Like probably this month they're making an insane amount of money.
Yeah, their next earnings call will speak very highly of the last week of August. We'll see how
I mean when
it
they
goes.
Came out with that was in the middle of like nothing happening.
Yeah.
You know, that was just normal Hearthstone time. This was, I saw people open, I think Kriparian opened like $600 worth of packs on his stream.
Oh my gosh.
Some guy said that he opened 1,400 packs.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, so there were a lot of people surprised at those numbers, but this is how they make their money. They're going to
sure.
need to have all the cards, and they're going to need to get into the strategies, and they're going to need to, you know, very quickly figure out everything. They need all the potential. Well, they need everything. So obviously for them,
it's a tax write-off as well.
That,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the thing is that this is part, like, if that's your business and you're paying taxes on income made from gameplay,
yeah.
then you can write off the fact that you have to buy the game.
Yeah, every game I buy, I get to write off, which is nice for stuff I do for shows and things. But
it doesn't mean it's free.
No. It just means you can ding the government.
No, but if it's a business expense, that's how you make your money. Obviously, all of a sudden, $300 isn't as much as you know, the $300 you're spending just to have fun, and that goes. That it's either that or you feed the kids, you know?
So. Sure. What's impressive, though, is, so here's their business model is just interesting because you have a lot of long tail to this game, which is people who just play it for free. They're not actually buying anything ever. They're just kind of tinkering with it. They're not really playing for keeps or try hard. They're just there to have some fun and they enjoy it or whatever. And maybe some of those people graduate into people who will want to spend money. But there's a huge swath of that player base that just sort of does that and occasionally plunks down a few bucks here and there. But then you've got this like rabid early adopter, you know, day one group, which you guys are a part of. And that's, you know, that probably is what averages out to be the 20 million a month.
Well, I mean, it's like any of those games. Hearthstone is a very... I would say Hearthstone is like the gold standard of a free-to-play game that offers, you know... if you think about a game like Clash of Clans or something, like you buy tokens to be able to do more stuff or faster or whatever. Yeah. Hearthstone is like a similar model, but like accelerated and actually like a really good game on top of that, you know? So
yeah, that makes a huge difference. No offense to
everyone being like us.
Yeah. And no offense to Clash of Clan lovers. We know you're
I mean, honestly, Clash of Clans is also a pretty good game.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, absolutely.
It's a very interesting thing. It's very free-to-play centric, but the thing is, though, I would suspect, I mean, for free-to-play games, most of them, it seems, relies on the frenzy habits of a very small group, right? It's a few percent.
Sure.
I would suspect that in Hearthstone, there's a larger percentage of people who spend money because it doesn't feel as icky to spend money in that game.
When
and
the
also
game
the game
is really
super
good.
Fun. And,
But I think they spend it in a small, like there's a large number of people, I think, who spent the $50, right? And then only opened that, only opened those initial packs. And then everything else they're doing with gold, and that's fine for them. That's going to suit their needs. That's going to tide them over until the next expansion.
Yeah.
And then there's people like me who sit there and go like, I need more cards right now.
Yeah.
And it's just because I'm playing the game, and if there's an epic I don't have that I want in the deck, and I have to grind out a bunch of arena to do it, I'm just going, you know what? No, we're not doing that. We need to play with this card right now. So I will spend more money, and that's, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
To me, it's worth it because I play the game enough, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. No, it's like me day one on hero stuff. It's you give me a new hero, of course I'm going to buy it. You give me a skin that I really want, of course I'm going to plunk down or that for, or you know, especially now with the dynamic bundles, I'll just... spend, and you don't really think about it. When you're all done and said and done, you look at it and say, well, from an objective point of view, I just threw a lot of extra money at a game that's supposed to be free that I would have otherwise had. And, you know, if you really want to analyze it, you can start driving yourself crazy. But if it's a game you really love...
Yeah, and you're also your gameplay would kind of suffer if you didn't spend the money in your own mind anyway.
Right.
Because...
Right.
I can't play Chen right now, right? Like, not like I'm playing worse because I didn't spend the money, but I'm not getting the experience I want, right? Like, I want
I love this. I love this, you know, rationalization of like your mind would suffer if you didn't spend the money.
You actually in the torture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, it's definitely something that, you know, if you. Ultimately, it's not like super microtransactions. It's never turned into this thing where you pay 20 cents, but it's not a huge amount of money at a time. It adds up, of course, but for a hero in Heroes, it's what, $10?
Yeah, you pay $10.
Something like that.
Yeah.
That's a high
end. And I think that's Yeah. And I think that's one of the awesome things about being an adult, because when we were kids, there were all these things we had to like, ask for our parents. We ask our parents for a little bit of money, and $10 seemed like a huge amount of money. And ultimately, it is money. And I understand that, you know, there are people who can't afford these kinds of things, and that might be in difficult situations, or you know, not enjoy the game as much because of this. But if you look at the hobby of video games as a whole, there are a lot of different hobbies that cost a whole lot more of money, right? To enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, try taking up golf.
Yeah, take up golf. I was just gonna say, I have a friend who both golfs and hunts, and he tells me I'm crazy for all this money I spend on video games. Oh yeah, wrong friend. But he complains all the time about all the money, or just it seems incredulous about the money I spend on video games, which I don't think is all that much. Yeah, but he freaks out.
Guns and like bows
and camo,
and trips to Africa.
Yep, and his license to do it, and the freaking golf alone is this incredibly expensive thing for the he has a membership at a local club, you know, country club and all that. Like, that stuff's outrageous.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
It's just
he used to play video games.
He did a little bit and then kind of stopped playing at all. So I don't and I haven't talked to him in a while, but yeah, you do know what I'm talking about. But the funny bit is you know, he'll spend more. It's just what you value. So if we happen to value this.
It is definitely what you value, but it's also, I think, I mean, obviously, if you're going to buy every big AAA game that comes out as they come out, you're going to be spending a lot of money. But if you wait for a little bit, there are incredible sales on Steam. There are a lot of games that you can play for free and actually enjoy. I mean, as a hobby, I would suspect, obviously, it's not the cheapest. You know, you can go out and play ball on a free court, and that's going to be cheap.
Sure.
If you can also be a I don't know, car fan and go to see races and want to buy cars, and that's going to be on the other end. It's overall, it is not an insignificant amount of money, obviously, and no one should understand that I'm saying, that's nothing. Games are cheap, games are free, but I do think that as hobbies go, gaming is not the most expensive one far.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally fine. I mean, the fact is, like, I have way too many hobbies, and it's amazing that I have any money left over at all.
Yeah.
But on the spectrum of the hobbies I do have, the whole gaming thing, you can control it and have a good time without spending very much money at all if you do play. Like, when I play other games, which I, you know, pepper in here and there, I generally always play those in a free-to-play model.
Sure.
If I can,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then it's only a few games that I choose, like, well, this is a game that I actually am going to kind of invest in, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Hearthstone is that for me. But if I play, like, the Magic Duels, I'm not buying the coins to buy packs and that. I'm going to play that free-to-play.
Sure, because it's not your focus or whatever. Yeah. But
we had a discussion on The Angry Chicken about this, and I brought up that the free-to-play model of, like, Guild Wars is how I wanted MMOs to work.
Yeah.
And some guy was like, that's not free-to-play because you have to buy the box. And I was like, oh, you're right. I get it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I still consider that kind of free-to-play, right? Like, it's – I understand you have to buy the box.
Well, it's just not – it just doesn't have a monthly
it's
payment
no
model.
Subscription. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's free-to-play.
It's not true free-to-play. Yeah.
Right.
No, it's – actually, there's a term that I don't know if it caught on, but it's basically pay-to-play, which is kind of a ridiculous
pay-to-play
thing.
All right.
Pay-to-play is the kind of thing where you have to buy the box, but you don't have a subscription. But.
Yeah, it's a subscription-free video game you have to
so,
pay
like,
for.
Destiny exactly. Is which is basically – Destiny, sure. Like GTA. GTA 5, I guess you could say, is kind of similar.
Sure.
Right?
Destiny is a tricky thing because they had two expansions, and if you didn't get the expansions, you were kind of stuck below the new level cap.
Yeah.
And so you basically have three expansions a year for Destiny, which is cheaper than a subscription for sure. But
yeah, still,
it's kind of
it's a weird hybrid. Like, that's the thing. Everybody's got all these new ways to do it. All I know is I am immediately turned off by anything that when I get in says, you can build this thing. Go ahead and build it. I'm building it now. Hey, guess what? You can click it and speed it up if you spend one of your freaking shrooms or whatever the hell are going to be called in your game. I am done with that entire space. I'm done with it. I don't want to touch any of those. The minute they do that, like, there's this new Walking Dead ones getting good reviews. People are like, oh, yeah, it's like Clash of Clans, but with Walking Dead, and you set up your little camps. It's based on the comics, so Rick has no hand, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I'm getting all excited about it.
Spoiler alert.
I get in there. So I get in there, and I'm like, all right, let's see what's up. The combat, they show me that first. It's pretty good. It's this turn-based thing, and you got to choose up based on skills, and it's pretty cool.
That sounds awesome.
It sounds really awesome. And then they say, here's your camp, and then they start having – you can speed up building that instead of taking 2 hours of real time. It'll be done in a second, and you can buy these for 99 cents. I'm like, F off. I'm not doing
that. Daryl out to find supplies. Do you want him to come back immediately? Pay a dollar.
I'm not doing it anymore. No. Not doing that.
Yeah, that's the energy system. Yeah. Those games are called energy system games or energy games. It can be fine. I mean, I call them maintenance games. They're games that you have to go in and maintain the thing. And you play, you know, it's the games that you launch a couple of times a day and maintain the thing and then come back. I think it's fine. It's possible, depending on how it's done. It's completely possible to play them without, you know, spending money. But if you want to sit down and binge on, you know,
you can't play for a couple of hours.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah, if you play for an hour or two, the problem is, for me, the problem of the, you know, the fact that you would have to spend money at one point isn't really the issue. The problem is, it's really throwing money out the window because you speed up that one thing, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to need to speed up something else in the long run, right? You're always paying to speed up everything, and it doesn't end. And that what irks me.
That's the real drawback of those types of games, is it's never done, like what you need to speed up. So like, what am I, why do I care if I speed it up? Those games never hold my attention. I'll play them for a little bit and then I always end up, you know, putting them down at some point.
I always end up deleting them or something. If you want to play one of those the proper way, just play Animal Crossing. I know it's super cutesy and kind of kiddish, but that game's rad because there's no gated content. Just go do your stuff. And they make you wait for things, but there's no way to speed it up. And somehow that's better for me.
Yeah.
Somehow I'm like, oh, that'll take 2 hours. I'm cool with that because those people got to work on a thing and build a building and I'll be back.
You paid for the game initially. Yeah. And those games, remember, it's actually free to play. I mean, it's possible to play for free. And the games that are done sufficiently well allow you to actually play for free. Some of them will be, you know, incredibly annoying and they're not going to be there are, you know, examples of games that will nag you every single second and buy this now when you can't buy it and, you know, you can only buy it for 20 hours, it's gonna be gone forever. And like, buy a pack of gems and it's gonna be awesome, and those are kind of annoying, but some of them work well.
Now some people are yelling at their audio player right now saying, well, hold on now, Patrick and Scott, when you play Heroes and they say that treasure goblin mount is only available for a limited time, hurry up and spend your gold now, isn't that the same thing? And I would argue no, because I can earn gold in the game to pay for that thing, and it's actually the only way I can buy
it's the only way you can buy those specific mounts.
Now they
have some of the paid mounts gone away.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about a little bit later, but
the Nazebra, I think, is going away, right?
Yeah, Nazebra and the Tiger and also one of the flying carpets is getting removed. So maybe, just maybe, there could be some criticism there as to that being a thing. But
well, even before we move on, I just want to say about even Hearthstone, arguably, you know, you have to buy more packs all the time, and that's how they bring in more money all the time. Obviously, it's understood that a free-to-play game is going to encourage you to pay more in the long run, and it's not going to end ever. But there is something different about the feeling you get when you pay to accelerate something that's done, and then you pay to accelerate the same thing again on the next day, and when you actually buy the packs and get the cards, or buy the mount, or buy the hero. You know, you it feels like you've gotten something out of it. And
it's more permanent. There's a permanence to that mount. Yeah.
But you're also never going to sit down at Hearthstone and it's going to tell you like you've exhausted your amount of games played today. Like that's like another big difference too. So you're never going to have to actually pay just to play the game.
Yeah.
It's just to have cards.
Do you remember that cool, Dills, we played it for a while and even had kind of a guild thing going in it. What was that cool card game called?
Book of Heroes.
Book of Heroes was super rad. Yeah. I really liked that game, except...
But it was the same type of thing.
Energy system. Yeah, I hated it.
They had these raids and stuff that you would do, and then you'd eventually run out of energy, and the only way you could do it is if everybody in the guild was doing it together.
Yeah.
Which obviously on an iOS game, people are at work or people or whatever. So getting people together to do it, there'd be a time limit on the raid.
Yeah.
And then you'd run out of energy and then you'd have to like come back later when your energy refilled and remember, oh, we're still in that raid, so I better get back in there and do it.
Yeah.
And so that's how they would encourage you to spend money. So that, as fun as that game was and that little guild experience was, it eventually did exactly what games like that do. And we just all kind of collectively lost interest over time.
Peter out,
And then there's like, I logged in the last time I logged in, because it's still on my phone. Like I was just looking at it and there was an update for it. And I was like, oh, okay, let's see what's going on. I log in and our guild was still there and there was still like a lot of people, But I looked at it and it was like, hasn't logged in 6 months or whatever it was. And there was like one guy like, is anybody out there? I want to raid. Yeah. I was like, oh, this poor guy. He's cool just game. Been all by himself.
It was a cool game, though.
We abandoned him.
Yeah, poor guy. Well, he'll find his way back. All right.
Figure it out.
Well, there you go. Let's dive into some news. There is some, and we're going to do it now. World of Warcraft news. By the way, this I just saw this first and I thought it was interesting. Greg Street still tweeting a lot from his Riot account and or from Riot. He's now at Riot. I shouldn't say he's doing it from Riot.
His Twitter is like just his account. Though,
yeah,
right?
Occupy he's, Greg yeah. G Street or however
he's
it is.
Now no longer Ghostcrawler the
yeah,
dev.
They kept that name, but he got to keep his followers. Anyway, he tweets more about Warcraft and his experience there and issues dealing with like dev communication or design decisions, implementation, all that kind of stuff. He does that more than the Warcraft devs do, which is interesting. I'm not saying that everybody needs to have his personality or his meticulous attention to answering people's questions constantly, but it is interesting that a guy that doesn't even work there anymore is still answering more WoW questions than I think the Warcraft devs collectively do. which is, you know, again, I don't mean it as a criticism necessarily. It just seems odd to me, but he said something I thought was interesting. He said, how much of an impact, if any, do you think Activision has had on the creative process at Blizzard? And Greg simply answered with a single word, none. And that's interesting, because I think over the years, a lot of people have wondered if, you know, when World of Warcraft has had a dip, or there's been a problem, or something, you know, player base freaked out about something, or when they started selling mounts, or whatever it may have been, everyone likes to say, well, it's Activision. They're poking their head in there with their Call of Duty people and they're figuring out ways to monetize things. Do you think it's actually true?
That there's none?
That there's no influence on the creative side?
I don't know if it's true that there's none, period, because I think it's, but not like creative, but more just, well, we now have a new set of eyes looking on how much money we're making, which doesn't necessarily mean like a one-to-one like that influences creative like this X amount, but it's everyone in the company has to think about that at least.
Sure. And therefore thinking about it, like I couldn't go, Patrick, let's just say I'm Activision and you're Blizzard. It's not like I'm coming to you
all
and
right,
saying,
all right, let's do that. Yes.
Hey,
I'm Blizzard. All right.
You're
I'm
Blizzard.
Ready.
Patrick, it's not like I can come to you and say, Patrick, we think Thrall should have an eye in the middle of his head. And then you're like, well, okay. But I don't think that's the stuff we're talking about. What we're saying is like, all right, we're a huge corporation. The bottom line matters. We're publicly traded, blah, 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 blah. Like those things have to get to Morhaime and the upper echelon at the very least, don't you think?
I'm sure they do. And I'm sure Kotick and Morhaime, you know, have candlelit dinners and discuss the future of their babies and, you know, all of that. But honestly, I mean, I remember when I, in 2009, when they, it was maybe a year before they basically joined. Yeah. And so when I joined, I got hired, I was a little bit nervous about how things were going to go. And I have to say, I'm surprised that I have never heard, I was at a very low level. So it's not like I would have heard what's happening in the higher stratas of the company, but there was never any influence of any kind that I have seen. None, like ever. And I think the biggest example of that we have seen publicly is, and you know, remember, there was a point, Blizzard, you know, World of Warcraft was making tons of money, but it was still the only property that Blizzard was creating. And there was StarCraft on the way and Diablo on the way, but when Diablo sort of had the issues it's had, I was kind of like, wow, okay, maybe now something's going to happen, yeah, right? Maybe Kotick is going to swoop in and decide what Blizzard needs to do.
Right.
I've never heard about anything that would make me think that maybe that happened. And the thing is, similarly with Project Titan,
yeah,
which was canceled after having likely sunk in lots and lots of money in it. It's not like I would have thought that, you know, if Activision had that kind of influence over Blizzard's creative process, they would have said, you know, Kotick would have taken Morhaime by the arm and he was like, dude, you can't just let all of this go. We have to put something out.
Yeah.
Just you know, just put something out, remake a little bit of that money, and you'll be good. And instead, you know, they completely shut down the project. I think this is an example of how it's actually something very logical. Kotick likes money, right? Mm-hmm. It completely makes sense. And you know what makes money? Mm. Blizzard
games.
Why do they make money? Because they do the things that the way they know how to make excellent games, which sell lots of copies or which make people go and buy lots, you know, hundreds of packs at a time when the expansion of Hearthstone comes out.
Sure.
So I think there's a sort of a magic formula at Blizzard that people there have understood that in order to make lots of money, you have to make awesome games, and they try to make awesome games. And Morhaime is making sure that the environment is conducive to people making the games they think are going to be awesome. It's very telling that you have a lot of developers and heads, you know, studio heads that have come out of Blizzard and tried to recreate that kind of success. And you always see, oh, it's developers from World of Warcraft or developers from Diablo. And it never quite gels in the same way. Usually the games aren't as successful. And I think it's partly because of the company culture that exists at Blizzard and the fact that they're able to take those risks and to iterate endlessly and to decide if something didn't work out, that it actually didn't work out. And I think Kotick is clever enough to not break that.
Yeah. It's also very difficult to duplicate. So for those companies that come out and say, we're going to make Firefall and we're all ex-Blizzard guys and we have a ton of money behind it, does not a good game make necessarily.
No, but that's really smart on their part. That's like, if you're going to like point that out, you also have to say, you have to give a lot of credit to Activision for recognizing that we got into this company because they're going to make money. Yeah. And if we start screwing with what their formula is, then we can mess that whole thing up. Like that, you actually have to recognize that that's really smart, because not a lot of business people can actually do that. Most of the time they acquire things and then they put in new systems and they say, well, this is how we do it here. And the company totally changes. And this happens all the time with like tech companies where you work really hard to make this great thing, then get acquired. And then the thing gets ruined because other people get involved and want to make money and do it better and whatever. And they don't do it better. They do it worse.
Yeah, that's often true.
And it's very easy. It's very tempting. Not when everything is going swimmingly, but I'm sure when something goes wrong, it's very tempting for, you know, Kotick, I'm sure, to try and fix it, quote unquote.
Sure.
But I think it's very, you know,
well, it's ironic. It's ironic what you were saying about Diablo earlier. The irony in that is that the Real Money Auction House, which was a huge mistake by everyone's account, including Blizzard, and that's why they took it out, seemed like a thing that maybe, and a lot of people were saying, you know, we're saying that this might be true, that was a very Activision thing to try to get Blizzard to monetize that game in this weird way, and that it was a corporate-y thing. And it's ironic that you were basically saying, well, you know, you thought maybe then Kotick would step in when that thing wasn't working and saying, all right, guys, get rid of the auction house. But the irony is most of the player base pointed at Activision and said, you're responsible for this shitty thing they put in this game.
So that's an enormous misunderstanding of why the auction house was implemented to begin with. First of all, I'm sure it wasn't making tons of money. You know, if it was making millions upon millions, they would have found a way to keep it in, I'm guessing. You know, they're not that, you know, if it was making them immensely rich, then I'm guessing they would have found a way. But the reason the auction house was put in to begin with was that one of the core features of Diablo 2 was the fact that you could exchange items between players. And there was a huge parallel economy that would allow people to go on, you know, third-party sites to exchange, to sell and buy their items. So they had to put it into Diablo 3. If they hadn't done it, there would have been an uproar. And the only way to do it in a responsible manner was likely to have that auction house. And if someone else had a different idea on how to do it, then please feel free to let me know.
Here, I'll let you know right now, because I actually, this is the only part of your story I disagree with. Mm-hmm. I think that they had a built-in way to police this, and they didn't need the auction house to do it. it was an online all the time connection, which also pissed people off. But yeah, you'll notice that's still in the game. They didn't remove mm-hmm. that, even though yeah. they really don't need it for any kind of auction reasons. What they need it for.
But that's a different story.
Well, it is. But what I'm saying is it by its very existence, the online all the time functionality means that you can't take a standalone game that doesn't need an internet connection and hack it to pieces so that you can pull in stuff from third-party sources.
No. That's not... No, absolutely not. I completely disagree.
All right,
in case I haven't made that clear with my 15 no's. The way you police this is make everything soulbound. As long as it's not soulbound, you will find a way to get into someone's game and drop it on the ground and get money from their bank account through a different avenue. The only way what you do police with that always online thing is hacks and dupes and those kinds of things that actually
like a hack to make it so things aren't soulbound. You mean
right? No. No, that would be exactly
from sold down to not sold down. I'm gonna drop it off for you. Give me $50.
Yeah.
For example, but I mean the thing is, if they had implemented that soulbound element when the game first came out, we would have seen a gigantic uproar, even bigger than what we've seen with the auction house. It was the soul of Diablo 2 that you could exchange things with other players. Mm-hmm. And I think that the only reason we haven't seen the uproar for the soul-bound nature of the items in Reaper Souls is because we realized that not having them soul-bound does lead to basically the auction house, and it's a problem for gameplay as a whole.
Right. So, plus it also rolls for you, so you can do this if you get a sweet new legendary that also has a nice a transmog on it. You can drop it, everyone else in the group can pick it up, put it back on the ground, you can have it, but none of them are going to benefit by keeping it because it's not rolled for them. So there's a lot of things in there that I think worked out pretty well. I still think it would be nice if the game didn't require an online connection. And the only reason I mentioned that, I was going to mention it later, but was playing, doing some stuff. Bounties now matter a lot because you're getting specific crafting materials from bounty caches. Good. Yeah, that you need for certain things.
It kind of sucked that they didn't really matter that much before.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's cool that they matter, but it really blows when you're one bounty away from getting your cash and the server disconnects.
Oh, and then you just get disconnected. Yeah, and you lose all that work.
Yeah, you keep your XP, you keep any items that drop, but you miss out on the cash, which sucks.
So the 4 out of 5 thing or whatever, that does suck. Yeah.
And so about that, the thing is, even in Diablo 2, you had online characters as well, right? So I think a lot of people are going to argue to their podcast player, but you could make an offline mode and an online mode, and then people could choose how they want to play. And I kind of agree.
Like the console version, by the way.
Yeah, for example.
Yeah.
But no, the consoles is a very controlled environment, and you can make sure you can be kind of certain that people are not going to be messing with their offline characters and then taking them online. If you did it on PC, you would have to completely separate the two,
You're totally right. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, either you play an offline character and you can never take them online, or you play an online character and then you're always online.
Sure,
that's possible, and it takes care of hacks. The problem is you get a lot of people who are new to the series who start offline because it's a lot less intimidating, and they get their character to level 30 or 40, and then you're like, oh, the online thing seems fun, but then a lot of them are not going to make the jump because they have to start from the beginning
again. Yeah, but all Blizzard would have to do is have some sort of verification system where the server went, let's look at that character. Yep, looks clean, no hacks, bring it on over. And now it's permanently an online character.
I do not think that is the case.
Sure, they could do that. I mean, it's not, no, but they no, could. No. They could. Sure, they could.
Well, they could, but hackers will find a way to make it look clean. I mean, they're just always a step ahead.
That's true.
If your character just happens to have 500 million gold, it's just you've changed the number in the file, and you're like, well, how can you know that I haven't been grinding for 15 million hours to get all that gold?
Yeah,
you can't.
That's a good point.
I think and ultimately they had to make the decision. First of all, I think they want everyone to be online because it's conducive to more group play, which is more fun play, which keeps people in their system. Mm-hmm. And it's ultimately they want to make more money, always.
Yeah, but of course.
They had to weigh the benefits and issues that this would create. And I understand that there are issues with being always online. I'm not saying there aren't any, but I do think that there are more benefits than
Well, for the majority of the player base. Yeah, for the majority of the player base, it doesn't really matter at all. Like, there's a small subset of people who are very vocal about how much they wanted the offline mode because they really enjoyed, you know, just plugging in with a couple of people and completely separated from the world and doing whatever they wanted, right? Mm-hmm. And but that's a small subset. And that as much as they want it to be like we represent a huge number, they just don't. And this happens with every game where there's going to be subsets who play the game in a different way. Yeah. But when you're looking at the big picture, as Blizzard has to.
Yeah, and if it was happening more often, if it was a bigger problem than just the once in a while this happens sort of thing, then they would probably implement a system that saw that you were being kicked, still allowed you to do something, go back to town.
It'd be nice
and,
if they put that in regardless.
Would be cool, you know. But
it's always tricky, though. Like, the Hearthstone Reconnect, if you get disconnected from the game, sometimes works perfectly, sometimes takes a long time to get back in, you miss a turn, it's like you still are going to lose the game because of that. You can't ever really make those things perfect in the current internet age we're at. You know, in 15 years when internet is insanely fast, or if the government continues to not let us have EU speeds, then maybe that won't be a problem. But
yeah, speeds and integrity and all that stuff are important. But like, even in Heroes, they have sort of a catch-up mechanic to your character in the live game.
It takes forever to get back in, though. Right?
It's awful. Like, it acts like you were sent back in time and you got to claw your way back like Marty McFly, dude.
Well, it has to, like, it takes the time that you were gone, and then it has to essentially like catch up with like the game logs. I don't know.
It's weird.
It's not perfect, but it's what they can do, I think, right now.
Well, good news for Blizzard Activision, because talking about the money they're making and doing pretty well, and whether or not Activision has anything to do with it, Activision Blizzard is now part of the S&P 500, which is a huge deal for a video game company.
What other video game companies are?
I don't know that there are any. I don't think even EA is in that or has been in that. And so people understand an S&P 500 is a pretty big milestone because it basically is an indicator that this is a publicly traded American company that is what they would refer to as a bellwether for the overall economy, meaning an indicator for how well the economy is doing. I think that says things obviously about Blizzard and Activision, but it says a lot about video games as a sustainable source of economic growth. And that's a big, big deal that they're in
there. It is. It says EA is part of the S&P.
Oh, are they on there too? Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
They're traded on S&P and NASDAQ 100.
S&P, I don't know what that is. Video game companies.
I've never heard of that NASDAQ 100, but
there may be others, like, you know, obviously.
So it says like Hasbro, but that's a toy company.
Sure.
It's not.
And also, you know, like Microsoft makes a console, and they are considered a huge indicator of many things.
Yeah.
So if you want to
But this is like just a straight up game company that makes games, like not necessarily systems and all that. So,
sure.
Different thing.
It's interesting, though.
So is EA part of the S&P 500?
They are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apparently they are. So I don't know why they are.
I mean, this is from the wiki page about them.
It is a little mean.
They're traded as an S&P 500 component.
It makes sense, actually, because they're huge and they've been around forever. And
they've been around for a long time.
They're a venerable company, but
they make the same game every year, though. Like, they make about six games every year, the same one.
They seem to be improving some things. That new Star Wars game.
Now with a new quarterback system.
Yeah. But it is like kind of, I don't know, it's hard for me to separate my disdain for some of their choices and the fact that they share the same space. But look, more video game companies in the S&P 500 is a huge deal in financial markets in terms of video games being seen as a commodity that is not just a flash in the pan or a fad or a thing that fluctuates too much, that it's a sustainable, solid part of the backbone of the economy, and that's a good thing.
All right, in the chat room, we've got a question.
All right.
Without Blizzard, would Activision ever have achieved this? I feel Blizzard would have eventually. This is from RyeCP1209.
Well, maybe. I mean, Activision's been a successful publisher / developer since the Atari 2600 days.
But if you're saying that both of them together just did it, then each one individually probably wouldn't have done it for a very long time, right?
Good point. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You could probably say Blizzard might have. It doesn't ever feel like Blizzard cares. I mean, they care, obviously they care, but it doesn't seem like it's one of their main motivations, where if you look into Activision, you go, well, one of their key reasons for existing is making as much money humanly possible, and they make very smart strategic decisions to do that. In Blizzard's case, you at least get a sense that a lot of what they're about is making really great video games, and they make money from that. So they figured out a great balance of here's our creative desires and here's our results. And that's great. But yeah, if that was going to happen to them individually, I think it may take them longer than Activision, because Activision publishes a lot of other games.
Yeah.
But they don't make a lot of money on them. Basically, they make money on Call of Duty and Skylanders, with Call of Duty, they made so much money for a few years there. And Skylanders now is making so much money as well. And now, you know, they have a bunch of other properties as well. But I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not sure we would have to ask someone who actually looks at those financials. Sure. But I'm curious how much money Blizzard and Activision made last year and how much money EA made. I know that profit-wise, Activision and Blizzard is way, I'm fairly sure they way above the other companies in that space.
Yeah.
But I know EA didn't make huge amounts of money, neither did Ubisoft, or, well, lots of money, but not compared to Blizzard.
Well,
I don't want to say something stupid.
No, it's totally fine.
Yeah, the truth is we don't know the actual, we don't have the books open in front
of us. Sure, here's my guess, though, because if you look at, like, the biggest sellers of last year and who published them, Activision beat EA with the biggest single titles. However, EA has a broader portfolio of games and developers they publish for. So they've got like this bigger field of lots of money all the way down sort of a long tail. And Activision's got like 3-4 major hits. They have Destiny, they have Skylanders, they have Call of Duty, which always beats
EA puts a little less effort into each game individually, but just puts out more of them.
A bigger spread.
That are successful, right?
Yeah, bigger spread. I think that's how
And then it's like, you know, I kind of was thinking about, like, I feel like Blizzard's model is kind of like, you know, the sandwich shop in your town that just has a line out the door all the time that makes, like, this the best sandwich you've ever had.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, other companies that are like the McDonald's model, which is like, we just make this thing, but we have a lot of them, and we make a lot of money that way.
I like your theory.
It's two different ways of, like, doing the same thing, where it's like, well, we just make this really good product, and that's why a lot of people are coming to buy it, and we just make a lot of product. It's just different business models, really.
Well, I like your... That's a good metaphor. I think it works. Today's episode of The Instance is brought to you by DoghouseSystems.com. DoghouseSystems.com, making the best gaming rigs I've ever laid hands on. I absolutely love mine. And it's playing all my Blizzard games better than ever. If you want to get your own, go check out some of the changes and some of the sweet new additions happening over at DoghouseSystems.com. And as always, if you'd like to get yourself a free SSD drive, which is kind of redundant because it stands for Solid State Drive... If you'd like a free SSD, how about that? Use the code FROGPANTS at checkout at DoghouseSystems.com. They will take care of you and they will love you. That's DoghouseSystems.com and the code FROGPANTS. Real quick here, Patrick last week sent me an email right after we finished the show that I thought was really interesting, a link to a Reddit article, the title of which says, I'm 99% sure we will lose in Legion because of a huge hint in Hellfire Citadel.
Mm.
Patrick, what's the skinny?
Wait, what does that mean? We all die?
Theory? It's a lot of reading, but it does indicate this idea of perhaps a complete wipeout of Azeroth as we know it, or at least us as heroes, and then of a rebirth of some sort.
Yeah, well, maybe not a complete wipeout, but basically in Hellfire Citadel, I'm not going to spoil, and also I don't remember exactly what happens. but there's one of the cinematics where basically you see as the, you know, Kilrog's clan does, you see your end, and you see that the Legion invades everything and wins. And so basically I did spoil it, but
nice job. Hey, at least you warned us.
Sure.
Yeah, kind of. Well, I said I wasn't gonna spoil it.
Yeah, he said I wasn't going to, so continue listening, everyone.
Yeah, keep going. Oh, whoops. Oops.
But I'm not spoiling everything that happens and the way it happens. But so, yeah, this might have been put in there as, you know, a nod to the fact that maybe as they're preparing everything in they know where they're going. Maybe by the end of the next expansion, we're not going to manage to completely wipe out the invasion of the Legion. And I don't think so. Actually, I think it was Greg Street who also addressed this as a hypothetical. I don't think we're going to lose as in we die, because that is not super fun as a player to, you know, try and kill a boss and at the end he kills you and you're like, well, too bad, you know, just come back next time. But I think there might be a situation where we kind of win the battle but lose the war. And there is something that happens that makes us unsuccessful in repelling the Legion's invasion. That is the core storyline of the expansion. And that would definitely be, I don't know how it could take place and how it could not be, you know, how it could be not frustrating for the players. But it would definitely be an interesting approach to this thing where it would break the monotony of always having the bad guy and then you kill him and then you go to the next bad guy and you kill him. And here, you know, there could be some kind of a situation where, I don't know, maybe there are demons roaming all of Azeroth or parts of Azeroth that are still level appropriate, but they're just hanging out and killing some of the wildlife and some of the kobolds here and there. And you have to live in a state of siege in some of the cities, or, you know, it could make it into a richer narrative for the players as they progress through the game. I don't know how it would work because a new player would come in at the timeline of vanilla and there would maybe still be those demons around. I don't know. But
you could be killing the final boss, and then after you actually kill the final boss, you find out that that was all just a diversion so that we got all the heroes here trying to do this. And while you were there, you know, Gul'dan was off somewhere else doing something crazy, right? Yeah, there's a lot of ways you could do that where it's not like we all die. You don't have to infinity gauntlet the situation and like destroy the universe. You can just have some bad things go on somewhere else, and it's like a diversion tactic. That could be really interesting.
It could be cool, yeah. Also, it's, you know, it's the Empire Strikes Back factor. You can kind of create.
There you go. Yeah. You got to have that terrible ending that then makes you super hype for Ewok.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of hope at the end. You know, Luke's getting a little electronic hand, and the freaking droid's poking it, and he says, "Ow!" You know, it's their stuff. The droids are still a little dirty, but they might get cleaned up again. It's like that. Everything we need to know happened then.
Everything is exploding and you have to make sure that you hold off the Legion long enough that the Kirin Tor have to manage to escape with the leaders of the factions and what you've managed to keep of your armies, you know, a few soldiers and a few elements of your culture. I don't know, something.
Yeah.
I like Silver Wisp's idea that we kill the last guy and then it's revealed that was the plan all along. Like maybe we had to kill, like they needed that guy offed.
Oh.
So they had us kind of like a true detective kind of switcheroo there. And then we were like, we needed that guy killed so that we could go do this other crazy thing.
Yeah.
And now he's out of the way.
And you have Illidan that shows up and he had been fighting you so that you couldn't kill the guy for the whole thing. And now he's like, dude, you idiot. I tried to tell you again what we should have been doing.
This is Illidan's like redemption, right? It's like we kill Illidan and he's like, guys, I was on your side. Like,
there's also,
why are you killing me?
There's a weird theory floating around that Illidan and Sylvanas are going to team up and become a terrible threat to everyone after
that
this expansion.
Be a terrible threat.
Yeah, seems bad, doesn't it? A little bit.
Yeah, it seems very scary.
A couple of ex-elves living it
although up. Although not as scary as Illidan Abathur teaming up.
Oh, good lord!
I will
no.
say that.
Yeah, that's a shit show right there. Speaking of Heroes of the Storm, let's get through some of that real quick. The new Infernal Shrines map is out. It's pretty awesome. The first time in there was pretty scary for me. You don't know quite what to expect. I'd seen the preview videos, but didn't really, you know, you don't know until you get in there and get some strategies going. Those Punishers are awesome. They're formidable. They're scary as crap. They're fast.
And they come straight for people, not for heroes, not for buildings, which I think is the coolest
thing. Or they'll be hacking away at a building, and you think, okay, they're not looking at me. And then suddenly, he'll jump over your fence and start pounding on you. It's really awesome. Pretty visceral.
It's cool because there's some heroes that just can't, like, you know, normally, like, you can say, like, Kael'thas, go defend the thing.
Yeah.
And you can run off there and go kill the, you know, the boss or whatever, the golem. Mm-hmm. And it's fine because it never attacks you. So you can just kind of sit there and wail at it.
Yeah.
But with these guys, if you send, like, a squishy over there to get it, they're just going to murder the squishy.
It's a really cool
map.
The mechanic is pretty neat. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, aren't all these maps just sort of doing the same idea with lane pushing and a creature either controlled by the computer or you or whatever, but they're being really creative about how they switch that stuff around, and this is a great example of it, and I think it's awesome. So very, very pleased with it. And,
yeah, they're finding ways to really innovate within the space, which, like, you look at the other MOBAs out there, this is just a completely different approach in the first place. Like, they all just use one map and stuff. And then say, yeah, here's the objectives. Every game is the same. You go in there and you strategize around how to win this one map. And the fact that there's just more maps in general and that they've made them all feel very different is pretty impressive.
It's really good. And they've also outlined some of the store changes. So the money pig that's currently 20K in gold, it's a little piggy bank, is being removed on the first. That is being replaced by the Blackheart's doubloon. I assume you ride around on that thing like a disc. I've not actually seen it. That will be another 20K gold mount. That is in addition to the one that was just put in the treasure goblin, which I purchased immediately because why the hell wouldn't you?
Well, if you don't have 20K, that's why you wouldn't.
Well, I just happen to have 20K. But I decide, I'm glad I saved it because I really wanted that thing and I love it. And that's also
buy
limited time.
Gold so. In the game, right?
No, you cannot. No. You have to earn
so
it.
So the
you
only way, right, you had to earn it.
You have to
be playing enough to be doing your dailies all the time. And you do earn gold whether you have dailies or not just by like playing the game. So if you just play enough, you know, you'll get 30 gold or whatever at the end of a match.
Sure. But you'll get there eventually.
But it takes a while.
It absolutely does. I save that money from not buying master skins because I don't think too many of them are that great.
Yeah,
anyway.
I can't help it, man. I got to buy, like, if I have 7K gold, I'm like, which hero costs less than 7?
Yeah.
All right. I know.
That I'll do. Like, if I'm buying a hero on the cheap, I'll totally spend gold on that. But, like, master skins are just not, I don't think are all that good. I think they're okay. They're not their best work.
Yeah, so, most of them are like slight upgrades in my mind. Some of them are really good, but for the most part,
I still think you should get a master skin just by hitting 10. I don't know why you have to pay 10K. Gold.
I know. It's 10K seems like a lot. That's just a big sink.
Yeah.
Like was, 5K.
Sure. Give half it. Yes. You know? Oh, my gosh. We just solved their problem. Make it half. We're all in. But anyway, so that's a limited time mount, too. So if you want the treasure goblin, you got to get it before they take that away. No date on that. But Magic Carpet and Lunar Tiger. Now, here's where the paid stuff. These are currently dollar-based mounts. These are going away on September 8th. I don't know why they're actually... I don't know why you have to get rid of them. But anyway, Dire and Cyber Wolves are being... those are being replaced by those. On 25th, which is next Tuesday, the entire Nexus bundle is being removed. And with it, that Nazebra mount. If you own all this, it's not going anywhere. You have it.
Yeah. I bought the Nexus bundle because it was... Once they made the bundles cheaper... Yeah. Or if you had heroes already, it was a really, really nice price. And I got the mount and a couple heroes I didn't have for a lot cheaper. So I went for that.
Did you have did you get any gold for having spent?
I don't think so because I wasn't buying those bundles if I owned heroes because I was just like, I can't in my head reconcile the fact that I'm spending money I shouldn't.
Right.
So I just didn't buy.
Oh, you're so weak, Dills.
I'm not weak.
No problem doing it.
Yeah, people like me. I'll tell you what, though, I didn't hardly get any. I probably got an extra 1,000. And then Terpster tweets that he got 70 grand in gold in Heroes.
Which I don't understand.
I don't even think he's playing Heroes very much anyway.
Like, he plays all the games, but he probably what he did is he just went in and just bought a whole bunch of stuff, and some of it overlapped.
Yeah,
you know how he is. Like he buys donuts and Simpsons Tapped Out and stuff. Like
that's a good point.
He just does that.
He spent hundreds of dollars on Simpsons Tapped Out.
Yeah.
So I don't even know why I even brought up the question why he got 70K gold. But
that is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Scott, I'm going to say this though. I think the reason for removing those old mounts is that actually encourages people to buy those mounts.
Yeah.
Of course.
The fact that they're going to go away motivates people who like need to have something that no one else will ever be able to have.
Yeah, but Patrick, do you think they rotate them back in?
I don't play the game, and I feel like I'm missing out by not... I'm almost going to launch
it. You should go in there and buy this.
Yeah. Of course, it's two things. It's gold sink and, you know, making sure that... Well, the ones that you can buy for money, it's to make it a little bit exclusive. I'm sure it's to simplify their offering as well. It's never fun if you have to... you know, go through 15 million pages to find the stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them come back at some point. I think they mentioned something about the goblin.
Yeah.
They said it might come back in the future, maybe. Didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The thinking is, and you're right, like they're not going to put all this art and assets work into something and then have it disappear forever. It's just like when they do hero rotations. It's the same idea. So I think you're right. I think the stuff will show back. Doc Holland in the chat room makes a point. He says this creates a manufactured scarcity, which time and time again has proven to increase sales. I totally agree. That's exactly what it is. I mean, these are polygonal fake things that don't really take up shelf space. It's not like Hurry,
we actually we had this conversation at my work recently because when we run sales, Patrick's got a guest in the background there. When we run sales at my work,
hi.
if we run the sale for too long, it actually ends up hurting our overall sales because people don't feel like they need to jump on that while it's available.
Yeah.
But if we run the sale and we say it's only for 4 days that this will be on sale, then people just go nuts and all purchase the sale price because they just feel like I don't want to miss out on this.
Yeah. Well, I genuinely want and glad that I got the Treasure Goblin mount. The fact that it was also going to be a limited time only is motivating. It's part of it. Not
it's
right away.
Coming up one, right? It's the money pig, and then we'll lose the, and then it's kind of we'll rotate that one out.
I'm guessing. I'm guessing we got 6 months with that.
Yeah.
That goblin. So, and he's awesome, and that's all. I mean, I even have. Listen, I bought the skin for Tassadar where I can turn into a jet plane. I pick that skin where he's like the robot when he's walking.
And you can't use your mount.
And right, well, you can. So here's the fun part. So I'll just not use the plane mount transformation, and I'll put him.
Oh, you can select that.
Yeah, so I can ride around on a treasure goblin as a plane. It's amazing. You should see
that's
it.
Awesome.
It's incredible. Anyway, that game is great. Still loving it. Playing the hell out of it. Diablo also had a giant patch this week. 2.3 came out. It is really awesome. If you're in America, you start your season 4 characters tonight. If you're Patrick, you already got it. Patrick, woo-hoo! you got your Kanai's Cube. You're all good. You're working on all that.
Yeah, the Kanai's Cube is kind of I went to do the quest to do it. I think Zoltan Cool's return is hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
And you know, this is just so funny. He comes back and he's like, aha. So anyone who's played Diablo knows who that guy is. If you don't, then go play Diablo.
Yeah.
He's like, you thought you killed me, but really you did a terrible job at it. I don't know what to tell you. And he's like, and by the way, there's this item of immense power. I really think you should go get it for me, and then I'll help you out. Yeah. And you're like, he's betrayed you a million times. And like, okay,
the guy's the worst. You can't trust Zoltan Cool, dude. He's a butthole.
Still, you go get that item.
Well, yeah, you're a stupid Nephilim. You're just like, all exactly. right, I'll go do the thing.
Well, you know, if he betrays us again, we'll just slice him up again.
It's well, fair. I went and kept, the funny bit is, so here he is standing in town with his cube, and then I'm off to do Act 2 bounties because I need some of that Act 2 business. And I go out there, and one of the acts is to kill Zoltan Cool again. So not only am I killing him again in some sort of proxy way, but he's sitting back at camp rubbing his hands together going,
well,
I got my cube.
Well, but that's so just the way the game thing works, is, right? How many times
no, but the thing
the
is,
game?
Right.
Zoltan Cool at the camp is the disembodied spirit version of Zoltan Cool.
Sure.
The one you kill is the one that you recreated the body of.
Right.
So... Right? It makes complete sense.
It totally does. Sure. It's like Looper. I don't know what's happening.
But yeah, no. So the Kanai's Cube is a little bit confusing.
Very confusing.
On how to use.
Yeah.
I had to like stare at it and its recipes for longer than I'd like to admit to understand that. So the thing to know is that when you mouse over the components that you need to do stuff with the Kanai's Cube, it tells you where to get them.
Yeah.
So that's the key thing. Once
that
you
is absolutely
this,
the key. If you're not looking at that, then you're very lost as to how to make that damn cube work. And they give you flavor text on the cube. Like one of the recipes will have all these things you got to do. And then out at the bottom, it'll say some really cool flavor text about some lore. You'd think that have something to do with that recipe. But instead, it's just like... The Lord of the Dark came and poked me with a stick. And it's like, there's nothing. There's nothing there. So it is very confusing, but I think that was on purpose. I think they were trying to create a thing you'd have to get your head around. And once you did, there are even a couple of recipes that don't, they're not documented. You can just make, like there's a portal to the cow level that you can throw stuff in there to make. There's another, I forgot the other one. So I'm sure there are even some hidden ones we don't know about. It's a bit like Minecraft crafting tables in a weird way, which you could argue is like the original Herodric cube from Diablo 2. So maybe these guys are all, you know, incestuously using the same idea, but it's
it's fun. I tried to upgrade a rare item into an epic one, and it didn't work for some reason. I don't know why, but so yeah, I sort of got the Kanites cube and I was like, okay, I'll do this later.
Yeah.
And I went to do some bounties, which are, there are different bounties. They added some, so, you know, there's a little bit of variety there. Yep. And you get, you have a reason to do them because you need the materials you get from the bounty caches for the Kanai cube. I also just started like a couple of hours before we started the show, the season 4 started, and you have this, you know, series of quests kind of you have to do through the season. So I created my first seasonal character ever.
Yeah.
I really think this is a fun, super fun update to get you back into Diablo if you've ever been in it, and have fun again. You know, it's the game that for me never dies. I always enjoy coming back to it. Since the very first, you know, release,
yeah,
when people were complaining about it,
I still enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm very curious if I'm allowed to look forward a little bit. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen at BlizzCon, whether or not they're going to announce something, and if they do, is it going to be an expansion or is it going to be Diablo 4?
Yeah, it's very possible. Who knows?
Either way, I'm going to be super excited.
Either way, all the signs seem to be pointing to a major Diablo announcement, and I could not be more excited.
Do they, though?
I think a lot of signs point to it. You got a StarCraft expansion already known and coming out. You got beta for Overwatch. You know that's coming out. You got all this hero stuff in the works.
Oh, so the schedule, right.
The schedule. So, and WoW got announced. Legion got announced early by 6 months.
It's true.
So what else is there? And it's got to be that, dude. And all these job listings they're putting up for Diablo. Like, there's new things happening. Yeah. There's something happening.
Yeah, well, so Diablo, the job listings, I'm sure there's something happening. The question, they're not going to stop making Diablo after Diablo 3, right?
Yeah, so, well, they sold 36 million copies of the damn thing. I think they'll be fine.
Exactly.
But I'm just surprised they've kept the momentum of Diablo going for this long, because so many times I felt it was waning, and then it just always seems to come back like even stronger.
Yeah. That's what I love about it. And if that's their attitude about this particular franchise moving forward, I it's why I want Blizzard never to go away, because it just means they love what I love, and I want this game to be, you know, made forever. It is my favorite game.
You want to be an old man playing Diablo 6.
I'm ready, dude. Yeah. My body is ready.
Diablo 6, wow. Three ahead?
We're talking more old here. We're not getting old yet.
Yeah, I could be dead then. Close. I could literally die by then. We'll see.
For WoW, I'm suspecting that the reason they announced it at that point was because they needed to get the beta rolling. And before BlizzCon.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, there's a side benefit of that, but I think it leaves the stage wide open for some kind of big Diablo business.
Sure. They could not announce anything at BlizzCon.
Just all come hang out.
Just
and
Geek
no
Is. Yeah, Chris could do Geek it, Is Part 2.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
He should do Geek Isn't. Here's what Geek Isn't.
That's a great idea. Why
Geek
not?
Isn't wearing a tie to work every day.
One last final note: if you want that Malthel's horse or whatever that is, his steed, I forgot the name. Anyway, the horse that Malthel apparently hangs out with is available in Heroes of the Storm if you get a Season 4 Diablo 3 character to level 70, which should be no problem. I'm taking a monk this time to 70. I've decided. I've never really played
monking it up. Huh?
Never played a monk seriously in the game, so this will be
my
first time.
I'll witch doctor.
All right, you go WD, yo.
I was gonna do whichever one you didn't do, because I have both of those available.
That's why I love when the witch doctor hits level 40. It's WD 40. Think of that. And Patrick has no idea what that is.
It has so many uses.
Yeah. No, it really does. Really greases
some
the wheels.
Kind of cleaning agent.
It's
for
a. It's like no, a
it's
lubricant.
Whatever. Like if you like, let's say you like break your arm, just spray a little WD 40 on that thing. You're fine.
Oh. There
you
go. Yeah. People, how come we don't have that sorcerer's technology in Europe?
We don't want to share that with the rest of. That's why America's so strong.
Yeah, we got to keep something on top here with Trump running and everything. Hearthstone. So let's dive into some of that real quick. I guess we've talked a bunch about opening packs and everything, but apparently
about why we would want to buy the packs.
Yeah. How did it go? Did you get the cards you want? How did the expansion go? Is there anybody going, oh man, there's a big problem no one's addressed here? Or did things go swimmingly and wonderfully?
For me, it was nice. Garrett apparently only got one legendary out of his, but he only opened the initial 50. Mm. So what I did is I had my 50.
Yeah.
And then I had about 5,000 gold that I had saved up. And so I bought 50 packs with just gold.
Yeah.
So I opened 100 packs.
Yeah.
And I got 7 legendaries and a lot of epics and So I was basically like kind of just ready to go and make any deck I wanted to straight out of the gate. I'm still missing a few, I think, fun epics and a couple of legendaries that I kind of want. So I broke down and I bought another 60 packs. I haven't opened them yet. I'm going to open them on stream later.
Yeah.
So now I will have beaten Jocelyn in total number of packs opened.
Yeah. I love this.
It's a competition, yeah. People. The one who opens the most packs, yeah. The one who opens the most packs wins. Yeah. We all know exactly. That.
So, or loses, Patrick, depending on how you look at it.
Is better at Hearthstone. I think that's how it works. Yeah. Dang. But so yeah, so I think I did pretty good. But Patrick, you were in the EU, and I have an EU account, but I didn't play it. But apparently, like, it was a mess day one. So I don't, like, did you experience it? What happened?
Yeah.
So day one, I think they launched the expansion around 7 p.m. my time. And for about 3, 4, 5 hours, you really couldn't log in. There was a lot of, the game was super slow for those who were logged in, and I don't know whether it is because they changed something in the infrastructure that made it not work as well with the, is my video gone? Why is my video gone?
It is. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Strange. Sorry. Yeah. So I don't know if they changed the infrastructure and it didn't work out, or if they it was just so many people that showed up for the expansion, that the infrastructure crumbled under the weight of the excitement of the players. I'm guessing it would probably have to do with the second one. There were just too many people that logged in.
It did feel sluggish all day, even on the NA side, but the EU side apparently just couldn't. Like, people had their packs, and they were like sitting in front of them, and they would open the pack and the cards would hover, and then you couldn't actually like click them or all sorts of crazy.
You had to wait for like 10, 15 seconds sometimes before you could open the pack. So I just didn't bother and, just logged off, and I played on the next day. And at that point I opened, 50 packs, the initial 50, and got like 2 or 3 legendaries. And then I bought another 5 packs. And Jocelyn showed up on the stream. I was streaming my opening, and a lot of players were like, "Yeah, I'm giving you my power to get legendaries," and I wasn't getting any.
By the way, you heard it here first. Patrick was streaming his openings. Go ahead, continue. You go ahead and keep going.
Oh, I think we lost him.
Oh, we did.
We lost him.
Crap.
What? How does it end? How does the story end?
Oh, I can't stand not knowing.
I'm guessing that it was Josh showed up and then he got legendaries. I'm just going to, like, spoiler alert, I think that's what happened.
I like this. It's choose your own adventure style in the Patrick's story.
So, we'll never know.
Anyway, you're back. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I've been talking for, 10 minutes?
No, like maybe a minute is all. It wasn't too bad.
So Josh showed up.
So you were streaming your openings and then Josh showed up. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
And she was like, different players were saying, "Hey, I'm giving you my power to get legendaries." And Josh showed up and he was like, "Josh power." And I got like 3 legendaries.
No way. Nice. Really?
That was good. Well, 2.
I mean, not that I'm suspecting actual black magic here, but that's still pretty impressive.
I think the way to do it, the best way if you're having bad luck is switch your card back. Because I think certain card backs have better luck when you're opening packs. Completely. Yeah.
Is that how this is? This is like a black cat.
Scott, and so, you have to, when you put the pack into the slot, you got to like spiral it around a little bit and then drop it in.
So having, I have insider knowledge, as you all know, and I can confirm that Dills is correct. Yeah. If you're not getting good luck with the openings, just switch the card back and you'll be better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, I got a bunch of epics. They were good. I'm happy with the numbers I got. And then I got into the game. The epics, the legendaries, for me, they're not the ones that I'm going to be crafting. Maybe one if it turns out that it completely dominates the meta, like Dr.
Like an
Boom.
Amazing card. Yeah. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think Chilmaw and Varian are like really, really good cards. But
yeah.
But so the ones I got kind of suck. So I was happy that I got legendaries, but like it was kind of whatever. But I did get epics and that was fun. And I've been trying out a Mercadin deck, which is super fun. Not managing to win a whole lot of games, but currently, the meta is completely crazy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Has the meta settled at all, or is that still a big cloud of crazy?
No, it won't for a long time. Right now you're seeing, like right now, if you played the game a lot, You'll start and then someone will play a card and you'll go, oh, that means this is a tempo mage or this is a whatever. And then the next card will just blow your mind and you'll be like, what? Right. No, wait, what is this?
Right.
And like, it's just like that everywhere. And I'm at rank like 6 or 7 now because I tanked a bunch of ranks because I was trying all sorts of weird stuff. And every single time I think I've got a deck figured out based on like, because usually like the first couple cards I can kind of, I'll know, oh, that's this deck, right?
Yeah.
Based on the first couple turns. And I adjust accordingly. Right now, there's no, I'm essentially just, I play my game and I just see what happens. Yeah. And it's just, it's the Wild West, like we said last week. So,
and
it's
you like, awesome. And everyone loves that. That's a fun thing. Yeah, for sure.
Have you found that the decks you're seeing are usually small variations on existing decks? Or have
I've
people started
a lot.
Creating entirely new things with like
there's a lot of entirely new things. So I've seen so far, yeah, like Murloc Paladin, like you were saying. I've also seen this like Token Paladin, which is, it does play that single Murloc, but it's not, there's no other Murlocs, just the Murloc Knight and just a bunch of cards that generate a bunch of little tokens. And then there's the Secret Paladin is brand new.
The Murloc Knight, for those who don't play, it's a card that when you use your hero power, summons another Murloc.
Yes.
So
if you can play it on turn 6, you play it, it costs 4, you play it on turn 6, and then you also hero power, you actually make 3 guys on turn 4, or on turn 6. And so you spread out your power, and you can get really lucky. There's some really good Murlocs, so he's a very, very strong card. And so there's that. Then there's a Secrets Paladin because there's that one card. It's a 6 mana 6/6 that puts all of like one of each secret that you have in your deck into play. And it's, if you get that turn off, it's incredibly powerful. Unfortunately, if you draw all your secrets in the first few turns, it really sucks because they're all really terrible. But there's that. There's Taunt Warrior, Dragon Priest, Beast Druid, Totem Shaman. There's just, it's insane right now. So if you don't like it, just throw in everything you thought you knew about Hearthstone and just take every game as a new learning experience for how the game is right now. Cause it's the Wild West.
Just
it's
have
awesome.
Some fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Play that game.
And it was,
it sucks when there's only one deck going around. It really sucks. This is more fun.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and that's what, sure. This will happen here too, right? Eventually though, like we'll get down to one deck and then it'll be time for a new expansion, I guess. Mm.
I guess so. There's been a really strong domination of Patron Warrior,
correct.
For the past few months. I think it was kind of out of balance, and I don't know that it will come back to that. But yeah, at some point there are going to be a handful of decks that are going to be dominating, and that's the way it goes. And you have
the decks will get refined. Like right now, all the decks too are really unrefined. So like while the Secrets Paladin, a lot of people are saying it totally sucks, it might just be that the correct list hasn't been landed on yet. Because for a while, people were really trying to make Patron Warrior work and it sucked. But everyone was trying to do things like Wild Pyromancers and all these other different ways. And then like finally, like people started to really, really refine that deck. And just kind of boil it down to what its essence was. And now it's just like so good.
Yeah. And even garbage players like me hear Patron Warrior being spouted all the time and know what people are talking about.
Yeah. Well, it's a deck. Once it got refined by the really smart players and everybody started, it's still really hard to play. But even if you're losing games with that deck, you can always come back and win. It's just kind of one of those things. And so once these other decks get refined, then we'll see some kind of emerge as the new strongest candidate. Right now, it's just everyone's trying out weird different things.
I love the chat room. We got a comment here that says, I have a super fun shaman deck, possibly made a rogue commit suicide yesterday. That's awesome. Nice.
So a deck that I've been really having a lot of fun with right now, too, is the Mill Rogue deck that features Beneath the Shadows, I think it's called, or whatever. It's a card where I give you 3 cards called Ambush. Whenever you draw one, I get a 4/4 Nerubian.
Yeah.
And because I'm playing a Mill Rogue where I'm forcing you to draw through your deck, I'm like then getting a lot of these Nerubians because I'm making you draw cards.
Yeah.
So it's like, before you would mill and you would just be milling. Now I'm milling and I'm gaining board presence at the same time. It's a really, really fun deck and it's weird and people don't know how to play against it. And you kind of, and I like winning in alternate ways. I play a lot of aggro just because it's a good way to win. Right. And aggro, it's like you just pretty much put the stuff on the board and then you hit them in the face, and that's how you win the game.
Yeah.
This is like a much more nuanced, and you have to think through turns and manage the game really well. So
yeah.
I'm really enjoying that right now, and I'm glad that it's viable.
Plus, Nerubians are gross. So
yeah. When Nerubians just pop out of the ground, that's awesome.
They're disgusting. all right. Well, let's do a quick email, and then we'll get out of here. Here you go. All right.
Sounds good.
Hear ye, hear ye.
Why, it's the town crier.
It is the town crier, who's 15 and in high school now. Think of that. Call us 801-471-0462. That's where you can leave voicemails, or you can email us theinstance@gmail.com. This is an email from Vexa the Hunter on Chandris US. Says this: Hello, gentlemen. With the announcement of Legion and the obviously faster pace of WoW content coming down the line, I got into a discussion with my husband on the pricing of future expansions. What are your opinions on how Blizzard will price the future content / expansions? We talked about that each expansion will still have plenty of new fresh content, but maybe less heavy / dense. Is it worth the full $60 for new expansions? How would you like, or sorry, how low could it go but still make sense? So I've been thinking a lot about this.
And that is a viable question.
I think $39 is our new expansion cost.
$40, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. In fact, I'd be kind of shocked to see anything higher.
If the cycle is much shorter, and this time around it has been much shorter, right? I mean, two major patches within the expansion.
Right.
How much was Warlords?
$49. So $50, I want to say.
Because because that was the cost of the leveling up thing, right?
Yeah, I think so. No, well, no, wait, hold on. Is that right? Yeah, no, or is it 60 to boost a guy to 90? I forget now. Is it 60? 59?
No, I think it's... I don't know, because...
To just do that? Just the character itself?
Yeah. I think
that's only like $30 or something
I thought that was more... I don't remember now. Okay. But I know... But you make a good point. The reason I say lower, if it's 60... Let's say it's $60, and we've all been sort of... told by the devs on stage and otherwise that yes, we are now finally getting to a place where we can speed up production. And a lot of people were like, well, Warlords is a little thin as it was for 60. If you come out with that for 60 in the current environment, you're going to create maybe one of the biggest freakouts in the history of the game. I think people will be fried if they're going to pay 60.
I think it's going to be the same price.
Think
I don't
so?
Think they're going to change it.
Ugh,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think
man.
It's going to be the Warlords price.
Hmm. Okay, let's say this. We don't know this, so this is pure conjecture. But what if the game is like, a new continent to explore, content for another 10 levels, one raid tier, a handful of dungeons, and that just kind of becomes the norm, and it's more frequent. We get something every year, or maybe even quicker.
Oh, you're right. It is 60 to boost. So it's 60 for Warlords and 60 to boost.
Right. You still think
Jesus.
That...
Yeah. That's why I never did it.
It's expensive.
Yeah, that is crazy.
So do you think people... I don't know if people are going to pay 60 for an expansion where they're already told us they're trying to hurry it up. And I think the assumption is that it's not going to be... It's going to be less content than Warlords was, or at least not more than.
Yeah, but the thing is people are not are going to show up, play for a couple of months, and then... leave. And I'm sure Blizzard wants to make as much money as possible for that initial expansion. I don't think someone who hasn't played for a year is not going to think, most people are not going to say, I'll pay 59, but I'll pay 49, but I won't pay 59. Mm. If you haven't played for a year or two, you're thinking, I want to check this out. And I'm going to pay for a couple of months of subscription anyway. I don't think the $10 is going to make a huge difference. Of course, there are always going to be some people who don't want to do that. But
it depends on how scared Blizzard feels about the number of people playing World of Warcraft at this point, too, right? Because if they feel like dropping the price, $10 or $20, is actually going to drive a huge number of people to come that wouldn't otherwise come back, then it will make financial sense to them. But if they think that $60 is still a price point people are willing to pay, then they won't drop it at all, whether there's less content or not. So, it's we don't really know like what the conversation is going on internally, but to me, it would make sense as a player to drop the price a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think to a lot of people it would, but if they really aren't concerned with the fact that we've gone down to essentially vanilla number of players, you know, vanilla level number of players, then there's no reason for them to drop it, right?
I just can't imagine. I know most players are going to say, well, what's $10 is not that big a deal, but there's a perception problem right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so I'm not saying so much that it's that there's, you know, it does add up. If you sell 7 to 10 million copies of the game, $10 per copy is a giant bottom yeah. line. So I'm not trying to diminish that from a player's perspective, saying it's 10 more or 10 less. Well, you know, it's one hero in Heroes. I don't have to buy.
It makes a difference. Like, when there's two gas stations across the street from each other and yeah. one is like 2 cents cheaper.
Yeah.
And you always go to that one. And it's like, well, I'm saving like 7 cents or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, you'll still go to that one. Like, it's, people will not buy or will buy on the perception of this is worth what I'm spending. And it's going to happen. It's just, do they think that that number is enough to make up for that difference?
Yeah.
Of the loss of $10 per, yeah, you know?
What do you think?
So the SRP for Warlords, the standard edition, was $50, right?
Right. $49.99. Yeah.
$49, and for in euros it was €45, which was a hike of the price from the previous expansions, right?
Cataclysm was $39.99, is my recollection.
There you go. Right, so it was 10 more. Yeah. I don't think they're going to bring the price down because it wouldn't. I don't think it would make sense. I don't think they're going to bring it up though. I don't think it's going to be more expensive this time. There's going to be a few expansions at least when it's going to be the same price. Mm-hmm. So to answer the question, I don't think it's going to hike up to $60 the next expansion. Yeah. It might in a few, you know, when the price increase of everything, inflation.
There you go.
There you go. Mm-hmm. When inflation makes it relevant and they want more money, but I don't think it would be accepted of players. If they hiked up the price, people would indeed throw a fit, mm-hmm. not because it's content related, just because the previous one was 50 and this one is 60, and then you would get into the question of possible, you know, oh, but the content isn't as much, but the price hike from one expansion to the other would not be accepted by consumers, I think.
I'm convinced that the monthly model is the thing that may change, and I don't know how or what, and I have no predictions to support what I'm saying in any kind of specific way. But I just feel like we are getting to a point.
So you mean
where
the price?
I don't mean so much. Maybe the price. Maybe there'll be alternate ways, like pay 60 for the expansion, and it's a free-to-play game that you have to pay for certain things if you want little microtransactions. Or the expansion is only a little price, but you're paying 15 a month. Or there's some kind of middle ground where you're
paying
less.
So the Destiny
less.
Model where
maybe.
You pay for the expansion 50, and then you pay 15 for the patches? Or
maybe, but again, like I have no specifics that I can point to, because all of them sound dumb in my head, but I just feel like we're getting to a place where that's changing.
Like, even at the number of 5 million, which a lot of people think is some catastrophically low number, is not that low.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, you're talking about replacing 5 million times 12 or whatever the average is,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. Not exactly because of Asia, but
yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if you want to talk in like rough terms, you know, you're talking about replacing like 50 million a month, right? Yeah. Like, if we would go like by 10. So if everyone's paying $10 a month and you got 5 million players, that's a lot of money to replace with microtransactions. I don't know if they're at that point yet.
I don't think they are.
They don't think it happens until we're at like the million mark.
No, I completely agree. It's not this expansion. There's no way. But it's just, I always have that in the back of my head that the world is in a weird place. And even though they've been able to sustain it to a level that no one else has, even when they're the lowest or at their lowest, I don't know. I just feel like the writing is eventually on the wall.
Yeah, but these other free-to-play games have been essentially like the doors are going to close if we stick with this model. Like, and that's, WoW is nowhere near that, really.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
I think the problem with changing the model is that it's really difficult to break something that's working. And as you're saying, Dills, it's still working very well. And once you've broken it, you can't come back. Mm-hmm. You can't say, you know, oh, we're going to make it so you can, reduce the price to $5, and then you realize that it didn't bring in the amount of people you thought it would.
Yeah, you have to triple the people playing the game to even break even.
Well, and if anything, we've already answered the question. The token is supposed to sort of do this, right? So the token is an in-game way for people to mitigate their costs, and they're doing
it. But it's also just a way to reduce the black market of gold selling, right?
Well, so true.
Point. it's just to me, like, all the people who want to talk about free to play are only looking at the comparisons of WoW to what WoW was, and not WoW compared to other MMOs, or WoW compared to what's profitable for WoW, which is, you know, how much money do they spend to keep this game going, and how much money are they bringing in. Until those numbers aren't gelling, mm-hmm. there's no reason to alter.
I think, and Blizzard themselves have answered the question about the viability of the future of the MMO market, at least as it's structured today, and they answered that question by canceling Titan. I think that says a lot about what they think about MMOs moving forward.
I mean, we mentioned this a couple of times on the show, but pushing out a game today with a monthly subscription is unthinkable. Mm-hmm. It's you would be insane to do that. The only reason WoW is it's still working for WoW is because people, you know, it's so old and people are used to it. I don't think anyone today would think that launching a subscription-based game is a good idea. You have to masquerade it into something else, like mm-hmm. they do with Destiny, or mm-hmm. like they do with, you know, Heroes and Hearthstone, which are in effect pushing you to put more money in the game as long as you're playing it. If you know, most people, not most people will, but you
right,
know,
right, right.
on average, it will be.
No, that's totally true. And they've done it. So, I mean, the last two bastions of subscription models of any kind of note were WildStar and Elder Scrolls Online. And in both those cases, these were games that were started in the era of subscription is the way to do things. And they launched that way 99% of the time because that's the way they've been built. I even remember Kurt Schilling saying if their game had ever made it to market, they would have had a real problem with that because they built it. They started building it at the height of Wrath's popularity. And that's when you made a subscription game. That's how you played this game of MMO building. And then by the time you're done, it takes 6-7 years to develop this thing to get it to market. The market changed on everybody. I don't think there's any way that if WildStar was started a year ago, and they aren't, and they're still 2-3 years away from launch, that game wouldn't be a subscription-based MMO at launch. Then none of them would. Star Wars wouldn't have been either. They all would have gone with the way things are moving now. The problem is, you know, they all started 7-8 years ago when they started building the damn thing.
Yeah. It's so tempting, though, when you see the amount of money that World of Warcraft was making.
Yeah.
It was so tempting to do it. And by the way, I don't know if you've seen how many TCG games have been announced in the past like few months.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty crazy. And you know, I understand people are chasing Hearthstone because it's so successful financially, but I you have to think that many of those are going to be, well, I don't wish ill on anyone, but I wouldn't expect those to do as well.
And I hope the Elder Scrolls one's good. Because I like that world. Sure. I like that world a lot, and I'm not letting my Elder Scrolls Online. I didn't really enjoy that MMO, and I'm not trying to let that affect my opinion here. And so it's one I actually want to play. But you're right; it's going to be a glut, and it's going to be a lot. And it's like Minecraft ripoffs. Yeah. It's just going to be, you know, till the end of time.
But you know, it's also it could happen another way, which and in which Hearthstone has brought that genre to a lot more people, and then some other games are going to carve out their niche or maybe be more interesting. We don't know, but I will be looking at them and trying them out,
sure.
And I would never have done that before Hearthstone, so maybe everyone can win.
There we go. Everyone wins, everyone, including us. We've had a great show today. Thank you all for being here and listening. Let's quickly go around the table and see if there's anything to promote. Patrick, do you have anything going on this week you'd like to mention?
I guess FrenchSpin.com. You can listen to Pixels and to the Phileas Club. We had an episode with Garrett and Justin Robert Young on Pixels where we discussed, again, Hearthstone quite a bit. You can go listen to that. And we're going to have another episode of the Phileas Club tomorrow. It's going to be recorded, so probably by the time you listen to this show, it's going to be in the pipes.
Is Wendy on that one,
I don't want
by
to say.
Way?
Oh, well, okay, so you said it. yes, supposedly we're having Wendy, your sister, on the show as well, hailing from Sweden.
Fantastic. So that's going to be fun. I'm excited about that. That is so tailor-made for her, and she will have some opinions. It's going to be great.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you're going to get to see a side of her that people aren't used to, so that's going to be awesome. Cool. Frenchspin.com, not Patrick on Twitter. Dills, what's going on? Anything cool? What's happening?
Mostly just streaming. Check me out, twitch.tv/WillyDillsSF. I'll be streaming a bunch of Hearthstone and maybe some Heroes and stuff. And then I want to promote that Windows 10 sucks.
Yeah. It 75 million
it's
people.
Fine. What do you have against
Windows?
No, it's
fine. It broke a bunch of graphical stuff with a bunch of games, and then I had to like spend a bunch of time fixing them all, and that was annoying.
Yeah, I was one of the lucky, well, I don't, maybe it's more that there are a few unlucky ones and mostly lucky people, but I feel like I got really lucky. I haven't had a single glitch, like just total easy transition.
What happened was like games that were fine were suddenly looked really bad, and I had to go in there and figure it all out, and that was just like that didn't need to happen,
right?
You know,
it's true.
I had an issue with sound that for some reason it took me forever to find out. Basically, what had happened, if it happens to any of you guys, you will be thankful that I experienced this. Basically, the sound card, which is integrated into my motherboard, got the output switched to 5.1, and I only have a couple of, you know, two speakers. And so the sound coming out of the speakers port was completely muffled, and I didn't understand why. And I looked it up for hours. I stayed up for hours searching the internet.
It shouldn't happen with an OS upgrade.
And I don't know why it got switched to 5.1. I have no idea. But then I came across by complete chance, by randomness, across the Sound Blaster control panel. And I saw that, and yeah, I figured it out. But it really annoyed me for a few hours. And then my Skype recording app got broken.
I expect like certain software to stop working, but I didn't expect so many changes to be made to like existing software that didn't like that shouldn't have, right? Like that there was no documentation that this would change, and then all of a sudden it was like, what? Like, why is this different? Why is Diablo
aside,
like crap?
Aside from that, it's working fine.
That's fine. Oh, you know what I should also mention, by the way, is TAC 100 is Monday.
Yeah.
And we've now confirmed that we have booked Ben Brode, lead game designer, on the show.
Fantastic.
And he's confirmed that he will be there for the entire show.
Great.
And the show is probably going to be like 2 hours, so I hope he understands what he's gotten himself into.
Yeah.
But we're also going to have Karma, who is a really, really good player and streamer, and she's done really well in a bunch of tournaments and stuff, and she's been a guest on the show before. So she's going to come back, and we're also going to have the return of Frodan, who is like the top Hearthstone caster for all the big tournaments. He casts all those. He also works for Twitch. And just a really, really cool guy who was also a guest before. So we're kind of bringing a lot of people back in. I think Patrick's going to make an audio appearance at some point on the show.
Hey, look at that.
Am I?
Yeah.
Did you select my heartfelt message?
We went through all of them, and yours made the cut. So
nice.
I think we're gonna hear from you as well. So if you like the Angry Chicken, don't miss this one. It's gonna be really, really
fun.
Well,
it's a huge milestone. That's totally awesome. Congrats to you guys, and everybody should check that out this coming Monday, both live and archive.
That's right.
There's plenty happening in and around the Frog Pants Network. There always is. So go check out everything that's happening at frogpants.com. Theinstance.net is our website. The Instance or @InstanceShow on Twitter. You can also follow Patrick at NotPatrick, Dills at Willie Dills, me at Scott Johnson. Terpster should be back next week. He's at @_T. Our theme is by Matthew Oxley. We have restarted the Frog Pants Reddit page, frogpants.reddit.com. Lots of activity happening over there. If you have suggestions for this show or anything else we're doing, or just want to be part of the conversation, head over there now. That's frogpants.reddit.com. More great shows like this at frogpants.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Patrick, for Terpster, who's not here, and for Dills. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Yeah.
Thrumka, and welcome to Ask Miss Mulgra, your source on matters of etiquette in Azeroth. Today's question is, what is the best way for me to catch up on my quest for a legendary engagement ring for my future mate? We are a little sure of ourselves now, are we not? What exactly makes you think the orc of your dreams is going to say yes to your proposal? You think you can just flash around a little bit of bling and she will automatically want to become your mate? Now look, you could do the extra quests or get the new spells to speed up your rock collecting. Or you could accept the buffs to increase your DPS and heal faster. But a real orc would do something to stand out and show your female that you are worthy of her attention. Anyone with time on their hands can collect rocks in Highmall or Blackrock Foundry and give them to some dodgy mage to make a ring. If you really want to make an impression, I suggest you offer to wash the dishes. I am Miss Mulga, and that is my advice. Oh, come on, gosh. Follow at Miss Mulga on Twitter, or listen to previous episodes at missmulgra.com.
Hey, Instance crew. Radigan here from AIE. Just wanted to say I love the new format of the Instance with talking about all the different Blizzard titles. Love the show. Been listening a long time. Keep up the great work.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.